Hello, everyone. I wanted to share with you today, my guest will be Lisa Ott. She is the CEO and president of the North Shore Land Alliance and a wonderful advocate of the work we do here on Long Island, and she's working really hard to protect open space. And I'll tell you more about her in just a little bit. But first, I want to share with you an event I went to this past weekend. I went to the screening with the Cinema Arts Center and the Sisters of St. Joseph of a documentary film called Farming the Future, Farm Life on Long Island. And it was a great film and wonderful event. And there were a lot of organizations tabling there. I was there tabling for Slow Food North Shore, which is a nonprofit organization very close to my heart, committed to good, clean, and fair food. And they share the mission, the same mission that I have for my life, and that is to envision and promote a world in which all people can access and enjoy food that is good for their health, good for the people who grow it, and good for the planet. And if you're not familiar with Slow Food, I really recommend you checking them out. Also, the Sisters of St. Joseph, the campus where this event took place, was really an amazing place. They have leased land to 7 different organic farmers, including Island Harvest, which is a wonderful food bank so that they can grow some fresh vegetables for their food pantries, but also some other wonderful local small organic farmers. They also rent space to the Long Island Plant, the Long Island Native Plant Initiative, also known as LINPI. They have a solar energy field, a wastewater management system, and they've entered their campus into a conservation agreement, which the same type that we'll be talking about later with Lisa Ott. But they have saved some of their land just for agricultural use, and another portion is a woodland preservation project. And so, I think it's 30 acres or so that will always remain a forest, and that's pretty amazing. So if you are not familiar with the work of the Sisters of St. Joseph, check them out. They also have a nursing home on their property, and I was told that if you need a nursing home, that's the one you want to go to. They rent a part of their buildings to a Muslim school that was supposed to be a temporary situation, but they had loved sharing the space so much that they are still there after, I don't know how many years, but more than 10 years. So it's really a wonderful, wonderful place. Exciting news that I got this week. As many of you know, I am, or was, prior to COVID, the farm-to-school coordinator at Glen Cove Public School. I've been on hold since the COVID pandemic, but I am still very committed and love the idea of bringing vegetables into the school lunch program. But one of the things that I learned about as the farm-to-school coordinator is that there is something known as the 30% New York State Initiative. And what that is it encourages schools to purchase at least 30% of their food products from New York State. And if they can qualify and do that, then they will get an extra reimbursement up to 25 cents per lunch for each of their lunches that they serve. And that's big money for a school lunch program. They're working on such tight budgets that 25 cents might not sound like a lot, but it's huge in the school lunch program. But anyway, Long Island schools had a really hard time meeting that 30% because our milk, which is what we buy a lot of, and kids are required to take milk, or it's one of the options that they need to take on their lunch program. If you can't purchase milk from New York State, then there's no way you're going to qualify for that 30%. So even though Long Island schools were getting most of our milk from New York State farmers, it was being packaged in New Jersey, and they couldn't guarantee that all of the milk was New York State, so we did not qualify. However, starting this week, Cremo Land, which is the New Jersey-based company that supplies Long Island schools with their milk, has agreed to supply New York State authorized users, all the schools on Long Island, with milk from New York State farmers only, and that will facilitate reimbursement. So it's great news. It will mean that the schools can really rethink all of their purchasing and qualify for that extra reimbursement. So that's really wonderful news. I'm really happy about that. Also, I've written about this before, and this is, they finally have a petition you can sign, that I was looking for a few weeks ago, but I didn't have, they didn't have one. This is a petition to let, Horizon Organics, which is the parent company of that is Danone, let them know that we do not feel okay about the fact that they canceled contracts with 89 small family farmers in the New England area, so that they could purchase milk from CAFO organic farmers. And what I mean by CAFO stands for confined, let's see, I'm having a moment. But anyway, CAFO farms are not really organic. They have lots of loopholes, and they are huge, huge operations, and they can cut corners and really price their milk much less than small organic farmers that are really doing things the right way. And so Horizon Organics has let 89 organic farmers know that they will not be renewing their contract with them. And Danone is also a certified B Corp, which means that they are required to use their business as a force of good. And this is certainly not that. This is really good only for their bottom line, and it's really bad for these family farmers. And even though I don't believe people need to be drinking milk to start with, that's a personal choice. But if you are going to drink milk, it's really wonderful if you can get it from New York family farmers or any New England family farmers, because they come from anywhere from Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, and New York. So there's a petition on my website. We're asking everyone to sign it and let Dana know that we want them to reinstate these contracts with these family farmers. And now I'd like to share with you my weekly recipe. This recipe is a little complicated. There's many parts to it, but it is well worth it. It's a chili relleno recipe. And chili relleno, as you know, or may not know, it's really stuffed with cheese. It's poblano peppers that's stuffed with cheese, and then it's breaded and fried. And I used to love it back when I ate cheese. But since I don't eat that anymore, I needed to come up with a recipe that would work for myself and other vegans. So this starts with 10 to 12 large poblano peppers. And there's a bunch of different steps for it, but I'm going to start by giving you the recipe for the filling. I fill it with basically a bean mixture. You're going to need one onion chopped, one serrano pepper chopped, one Japanese eggplant diced, one yellow summer squash, one green pepper, 2 cups of cherry tomatoes halved, 2 tablespoons chopped garlic, 1 1/4 teaspoons of salt, 1/2 teaspoon of chipotle powder, 1 teaspoon of cumin, 1 teaspoon of chili powder, 2 cups of cooked brown rice, 1 teaspoon of chipotle powder, 1 can of organic black beans, and 2 tablespoons of chopped cilantro. For the batter, I use 1/2 cup of masa harina, 1/2 cup of chickpea flour, but you could use regular flour if you do not need them to be gluten-free, 1 teaspoon baking powder, 1 tablespoon potato starch, juice from the can of 1 can of chickpeas, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, and 3/4 cup of water. Then for the cashew crema, which is basically, you know, dressing that you put on top of it, it replaces sour cream, and it's just delicious. You're going to use 2 cups of cashews that you're going to soak for 3 hours or more, although I have since learned, since I've made this recipe, that if you actually soak them in hot water, the soaking method goes much quicker, so you can really just soak them in for 1/2 hour, and that will work too. 1 cup of water, juice of 1 lime, and 1/2 teaspoon salt. And then for the sauce, 1 onion diced, 1 serrano pepper diced, 1 small purple sweet pepper diced, 4 cups of cherry tomatoes, 2 tablespoons garlic, 1/4 teaspoon salt, and 1 teaspoon of dried oregano. I also want to just say that the vegetables and what you put into your filling is really interchangeable. I use what I have coming out of my garden. So I had the Japanese eggplant, but if you don't have that, that's fine. I had the summer squash. But, you know, if you want to put in broccoli instead or just the beans and onions and peppers, you can do that too. So it's really all of my recipes, you should know you have the liberty to change and switch things up. They're not etched in stone. That's one of the things that why I call myself a cook or a chef as opposed to a baker, because baking is very different where you really have to follow things exact. When you're a chef, you can really be creative and use what you have. So for the filling, you're going to start by sauteing the onion in olive oil until translucent. Add the garlic and the peppers and cook for a few minutes. While that's happening, you can steam the eggplant for 10 minutes until they're soft. You're going to add the summer squash, the spices, and salt to the onion mixture and cook that down for about 5 more minutes until they're soft. Add the steamed eggplant, the black beans, and the cherry tomatoes and continue cooking until all the tomatoes have broken down. Add the brown rice and 2 tablespoons of cilantro and continue cooking for a few minutes, letting the flavors come together. And I just realized, oh, 2 cups of brown rice, I forgot to mention. Okay. You're going to also want to broil the peppers so that you can remove the skins. And you're going to do that by laying the peppers out on a cookie sheet lined with some tin foil, not parchment paper because that will catch on fire underneath the broiler. And you're going to broil them on all sides until they're slightly charred. You want them to blacken so that the skin can be peeled off. And the charring just gives them a deep, rich flavor that you won't have if you don't do that step. Once you do that, you can put them in a bowl and cover them with plastic wrap so that they can steam for about 10 minutes, and that helps the peeling process. And then you can remove them from the bowl and peel them and set them aside. For the cashew cream, you've soaked the cashews, and you're just going to blend all those ingredients together in a food processor until they're really smooth. And you're really just going to blend it for a long time until it's really smooth. You don't want to see little crumbs of the cashews in there. You want it to be smooth like sour cream. And you can adjust the seasonings, you know, the lime, if you want it to be a little bit more lime or a little bit more salt, you can add that. And then for the batter, you're going to mix, you're first going to whip up the juice from the chickpeas until you have white peaks. And if you haven't done that before, it's really a wonderful thing to see. The juice from a can of chickpeas actually whips up the same way egg whites do, and it just will make the batter a little lighter. So in a separate bowl, you're going to combine all the dry ingredients, add the water until no lumps remain, and then you're going to fold in the fava whites. Fava is another name for the chickpea juice. So you're going to fold in the fava whites until that's well blended. Then you're going to stuff the peppers. You're going to make a small slit in the side of the peppers, cut out the stem and remove all the seeds and the ribs, and fill the peppers with the filling, trying to keep the opening as small as possible. If you have to, you can also use toothpicks to help keep them closed for the frying part. But then you want to try to remove them before you serve it. I actually served it recently and left a few of the toothpicks in, and that was not a pretty sight. So try to get the toothpicks out if you do use them. So you're going to make the sauce. You're going to saute the diced onions in a little olive oil for 5 minutes. Add the garlic and the peppers and cook for another 5 minutes. Add all the cherry tomatoes and cook for 5 more minutes. Using an immersion blender or a food processor, you're going to puree the mixture and let that cook down for about 10 minutes until it gets a deeper red color. And then add the oregano into that and just let it cook a little bit more. And know that if you don't have the time and you don't want to make all these sauces, you know, there's shortcuts you can take. You can use some, you know, good jarred salsa, and still make the peppers, and they come out great. And so now you want to bring it all together. You're going to dip those stuffed peppers into the batter and fry them in a light oil until golden brown. So grapeseed oil, canola oil, something like that. use a good quality oil, though. You know, make sure it's GMO-free. And the peppers can actually be made ahead of time, and then you can fry them, you know, right before serving. So if you want to split this recipe up, you can do that. And then you're going to cover it with the tomato sauce after they're fried. Drizzle the cashew cream on top. And that's it. I serve the rest of the cashew cream on the side because people really love it, and it cools off the heat from the recipe. And that is it. So I hope you all make it and let me know how you like it. And it is now my pleasure to introduce to you all Lisa Ott, the president and CEO of the North Shore Land Alliance. And Lisa is a native of Kentucky, a graduate of the University of Kentucky and the Columbia Business School Program for Nonprofit Management, as well as the Yale School of Forestry Conservation Finance Program. She is the past chairman of the National Affairs and Legislation Committee of the Garden Club of America and former trustee of the Nature Conservancy, Long Island chapter. The work she has done in helping to preserve open land on the North Shore of Long Island is impressive, and it was really a pleasure to get to enjoy that during this pandemic year when we were all looking for outdoor activities. I got to explore a lot of the trails that the North Shore Land Alliance has preserved for us, and it's really such a wonderful gift to our community. So it's my pleasure to introduce you all to Lisa. Lisa, are you with me?
I'm here, Bhavani, and thank you for that nice introduction.
Oh, you're so welcome. I always like to start my interviews by asking my guests to share with us a little bit about your own personal history. Like, how did you come to be the president and CEO of the North Shore Land Alliance? What is your, you know, passion that led you to this?
Well, I was totally unqualified to begin with, Bhavani, but I grew up in Kentucky in a small town, and we just took nature for granted. And when we moved to Long Island, first we were in New York City, and then we came to Long Island. And I began to appreciate nature again. You know, we live in the woods. We're lucky to live in the woods with the birds around us and things like that. But then you start to realize that, you know, things are changing. The world's growing. I think the statistic today is 6,000 acres of land are developed every day or lost to development. So, you know, we just wanted to ensure that there were places here that would remain as they are today for our children and our grandchildren and the people who follow us. And then the more I learned about conservation, my mother was a biology teacher, but I didn't pay enough attention at that point, is how much environmental conservation is important to the future of the world. You know, the trees clean our air, the open lands recharge our groundwater. There are just so many environmental benefits from protecting land. So that's how I got here, for loving it and wanting to protect it for other people.
Uh-huh. And so tell us about the North Shore Land Alliance. What do you do? What does the organization do?
Well, the North Shore Land Alliance was started in 2003. It's a non-for-profit land trust. And actually, the land trust movement started in the 1960s. And particularly, the first land trust was actually in Massachusetts. But we were coming to the game a little late. So a group got together. There was an Oyster Bay Cove land trust, a Center Island land trust. There were people in Old Westbury who'd bought big properties and didn't realize that there was no local organization to hold a conservation easement. So we got together and we put together a mission to protect and preserve in perpetuity the green spaces, farmlands, wetlands, groundwater, and historical sites of Nassau and Western Suffolk counties. Since then, we have we've gathered 4,000 members and 200 wonderful volunteers and 36 trustees, and we've protected about 12 acres of land.
12 acres? You don't mean 12 acres.
You're right, I don't. 1,200 acres.
How many? 1,200?
And we've done that in conjunction with local municipalities. We've done it through private acquisition. We've done it through conservation easements. But yes, 1,200 acres of land.
Right, right. So what's the difference between land conservation and land stewardship? I know you have it's different on your website. Can you explain what the difference is?
Yes. So land trusts take legal ownership, stewardship, or partial control over a property at the behest of the landowner. So land conservation is actually protecting land in perpetuity. Stewardship is taking care of that land, making sure that the natural resources are protected, if it's an historical site, that the historic integrity of the property is protected. And, you know, for us, all of the properties that we've preserved are open to the public and they have trails and, you know, everyone needs recreation. And as you started your broadcast today, I think so many of us found peace in nature throughout this pandemic. So I think for the first time, and at least in my neighborhood, people realized what I've been doing for the last 18 years. So I guess that was one silver lining.
Right, right. So with everything, all the land that you protect and keep in open space, do you take stewardship of all of it? Like, is it your responsibility to take care of all the land that you have protected?
It is not. There are different ways of protecting land. There's a method, there's something called a conservation easement, which a landowner contractually promises to protect their land in perpetuity. So if someone puts a conservation easement on their land, they need either a government entity or a nonprofit land trust to hold that easement and to steward and to defend that easement. So we have 26 conservation easements, which cover approximately 300 acres of land. And with an easement, the landowner continues to own it, maintain it. And then our job every year is to go back and look at it and make sure that that property hasn't been developed. So we do not maintain conservation easement lands. Lands that we have bought privately or in conjunction with local government, we do manage those lands.
Mm-hmm. So with an easement, after the homeowner or the person that actually owns the property passes, then what happens to it? Does it then become your responsibility or the government's responsibility, or what happens, or is it actually available for sale, just can't be developed?
A conservation easement is carried with the land. So, you know, if you decided to put a conservation easement on your property, you would still use it. You could still sell it. So the next person who lives in your house will also have that conservation easement on the land. You know, they'll continue to use it. There's no public access, anything like that. They just have to live by the terms of the easement that you set, which means that portion of your land is protected forever. And when people do that, if it's really good conservation land, then they're also eligible for a federal tax, or may be eligible for a federal tax deduction. So it can be worthwhile for people who make that choice. You know, the number one reason people preserve their land is because they love it. The number two reason because they love it is because they love it. But the tax incentive can be helpful in certain situations.
I know you touched on this, but I'd like to go back to the relationship between land and water protection and our environment and climate change. I mean, we're all so aware of climate change now, thank God, finally, a little late coming to the table, but we are very aware that climate change is happening. Can you tell us how the North Shore Land Alliance is helping to mitigate that by protecting some of this land and water?
Well, let's start with the relationship between land and water. I think most people realize that we have a unique geology or hydrology here on Long Island in that we sit on top of our drinking water source. Everything we do on top of the land impacts the quality and the quantity of the drinking water below. So if you don't have open lands, when it rains and it snows, you can't recharge the aquifer. And I think it was the Rausch Foundation and the Long Island Index documented that 2/3 of Long Island is impervious. And that's a lot of hard surface when you're depending on your sole source aquifer. So, you know, you have to need to protect land to protect the drinking water. You need to protect land to protect the surface waters. You know, we are blessed with these beautiful beaches and bays and ponds, and land, and particularly wetlands, help to keep them clean. So you have rains and storms, and, you know, with all this impervious surface, when it rains, dirt and debris washes into these water bodies. And so wetlands absorb some of the toxics before they reach the water. But in addition to that, you know, they're nurseries for fish and they're habitats for birds. And they're just very important for the whole quality of life that we enjoy here. You know, and back to natural resources and climate change, you know, we have to protect the trees and the plants and the animals for biodiversity. I think there was a study done in 2019 that cited that if we don't get a hold of this fast-moving train on climate change, we're going to lose over 1 million species, which is really quite sad. And then you talk about farming and food, which I know is dear to your heart. If we didn't have land, we wouldn't have access or the ability to grow fresh local food. So there are also other statistics thrown around. You know, when it comes to climate change, trees, soil, wetlands, peat bogs, all those things actually absorb and hold carbon. So when you convert them, you know, by developing land, then that carbon is let out into the atmosphere. And I read the other day someplace that a tree that falls actually emits as much carbon as a tree that's been a part of a wildfire. So there's a really, really close connection to saving land and protecting our climate. Actually, some statistics are around that say if we can continue to maintain the lands that we have, if we can keep our forests and we can manage them better, if we can farm differently, whether it is using cover crops or no-till agriculture, that we can keep that carbon in the ground. So it's incredibly important.
Uh-huh. It is. And how much land is actually available on Long Island for you to protect?
Well, let's put that in a little bit of context. Across the continental United States, about 60% of land is in a natural state. Only 12% of that's been permanently protected. So there's a lot of opportunity nationally. On the other hand, as I mentioned earlier, we're losing 6,000 acres a day. So that 60% is diminishing quickly. In New York State, we protected about 19% of land. So that's better than the national average. On Long Island, it's less than 10%. And when you think about the universe of what's left, if two-thirds already been developed and we've only protected 10%, that paints kind of a bleak picture. So, you know, the North Shore Land Alliance works from the Queens-Nassau border out to the town of Huntington border. And we did an inventory of what was actually left in our designated area. So, 9% has been protected, and there's actually 21% that still has the potential, might be conservation worthy or has the potential to be protected. So there's a big national program, and it actually is an international program called 30 by 30, or the America the Beautiful Plan. And scientists have said that to keep a community healthy and to save 75% of our species, we need to protect 30% of our land by 2030, lands and waters. And it's kind of, I think, hopeful to think that in this area, the 14 villages where most of the land remains, we still have an opportunity to protect 21% of us. And that, combined with the 9% that's already protected, could get us up to that 30% number. So I think that's pretty cool.
That's great. That's great. Can you share with us some of the projects that you have protected that you're most proud of?
Absolutely, Bhavani. And as I said earlier, things have been protected in different ways. If y'all will remember back in 2004, 2006, and 2009, our elected officials put environmental bonds on the ballot, and they were to protect open space, prevent stormwater remediation, create parks, and remediate brownfields. And they both passed by 75% majorities on the North and the South Shores, which was fabulous. But with that one, we were able to buy the 60 acres of agricultural fields that are next to Young's Farm in the village of Old Brookville. And I think that's probably the one that people cherish or value the most, because in Nassau County, to still be able to have 60 acres on which to grow is pretty cool. And it is shared by the Rodkamp family and the Youngs family, and they both continue to grow fresh local food there. So we're really proud of that. And then others that were bought with the bonds were Upper Francis Pond, 25 acres in Mill Neck, the Red Croak Preserve in Oyster Bay Cove, which is 30 acres of fields in the middle of the Special Groundwater Protection Area. And then the very last of the bonds was actually spent on the development of the Roosevelt Community Garden in Roosevelt. And there was very little money left, and the county had a piece of land that they didn't use. And we had a will and a desire to start a community garden in that community. And so they funded the infrastructure for that garden. It's now 4 years old, and it's been just wonderful. And if you move over to Cold Spring Harbor, because I think people who live in different communities value different areas, we protected the DeForest Williams estate, which is a part of it. It's 25 acres. If you were coming down 25A and you looked up towards Cold Spring Harbor, it's at the very top of that hill. And that's a beautiful forested area. And then another couple more, if that's not too many, people also give us land. And ExxonMobil Corporation gave us a 8-acre property waterfront where the oil tanks used to be. So we've spent the last, you know, probably decade, they took away the oil tanks and brought in new soil. But we've remediated that and developed it as a grassland. And it's amazing to go there now and see the grasses turn all different colors and see all the birds that stop there as they're migrating through. And then
where is that property? I'm sorry, where is that Exxon property?
In Cold Spring Harbor, right on the water.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. And then the most recent one is the Humes Preserve in Mill Neck. We bought that with totally private money. And it was a strategic acquisition because it's right in the middle of other protected areas. So there's the Shoe Swamp Preserve. There's the Humes property, the Humes Japanese Stroll Garden. We bought a parcel that connects all this up to the Upper Francis Pond. So there we created a 150-acre continuous corridor of open space. And because this area has never been developed, it is one of the most biodiverse, if not the most biodiverse, places left in Nassau County. So that's,
I have to say, I really got to benefit from that Humes Preserve this year. It's amazing. For anybody who is listening who is on Long Island, you really have to check it out. When you go walking in there, you really feel like you could be in Vermont. You could be anywhere. Everywhere you look, there's just beautiful, beautiful nature around you. It's just gorgeous. So thank you. That was just so amazing. You can walk from the Humes Preserve to the Shoe Swamp, Japanese Stroll Garden, and right into the planting fields.
You have to cross the street to get to planting fields. If you go to our Island Preserve, which is one that the Nature Conservancy gave us, it is connected to planting fields, which is an extraordinary place in itself.
Right, right. I guess I was walking there as well. Yeah, we explored all of them. I've never had the time before, but, you know, when I was laid off from the school district, all of a sudden I had this time on my hands, and it was just really wonderful. We talked a bit about the connection between land protection and climate change. What's happening at the state and federal levels to protect land?
Well, actually, this is some really good things. On the federal level, you all may remember at the end of the Trump administration, they passed the Great American Outdoors Act, and this was a bipartisan vote, and it was the most important conservation deal that was done since the 1960s. And the Great American Outdoors Act fully funded the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which hadn't been funded but once since it started in the 60s. And it also devoted tens of millions of dollars towards needed infrastructure and maintenance for America's national parks. So that was a really big deal. And that happened on a bipartisan vote in a Republican administration. And land conservation is not a political issue. Then this year, the America the Beautiful program and the 30 by 30, which I mentioned a little bit earlier. It was always known on an international level, but in 2019, legislation for the 30 by 30 plan was actually introduced in the Senate, and then it was also introduced in the House, but it never went to a vote. But then in the president's first address, he talked about the 30 by 30 plan and how important it was for America to step up and preserve 30% of our lands and waters by 2030. And he's following, or the administration is following that up with an action plan, which is really gives us all hope. And in addition to that, it includes an environmental justice part, and it also creates a new conservation corps for young people who want to work in nature. And, you know, when you think about the future, you need those people who understand nature, who love it, who want to be in it. So that's a very hopeful thing. And believe it or not, you know, the federal farm bill is the largest contributor to open space conservation. I know most people don't know that, but it is. It's updated every 4 years, and it's due to be updated again in 2022. So we're really hopeful that the piece of the farm bill will grow bigger when it comes to acquiring farmland, better managing farmland. And then on the state level, Governor Cuomo and Governor Hochul have both been big proponents of land conservation. And throughout some of the state, throughout the state, Governor Cuomo's administration, he maintained the Environmental Protection Fund at $300 million, which is a very respectable level. Of course, you know, everyone would like more, but that funds forest preservation. It funds farmland preservation. It funds grants to communities and to land trusts. So that's really hopeful. But I think the most exciting thing is in 2022, New York State plans to put a $3 billion environmental bond on the ballot. And that will, I actually wrote this down, contribute $1 billion toward restoration and flood risk reduction, $700 million towards climate change mitigation, $550 million towards water quality and resilient infrastructure, $550 million toward land conservation and recreation, and $1 billion towards environmental justice. So priority will be given to those communities who have the greatest need and who've been impacted the most by the impacts of climate change.
Oh, that's great. Let's just hope it passes. Are there any, is there work being done to spread the word to help, you know, help encourage our legislators to vote for it?
Not quite yet, Bhavani. We'll get through this election first, but come 2022, that's something everyone can do, is help us get that bond passed, because it really is about us and our future, and a healthy future for everyone today and who follow us.
Mm-hmm. What have been some of your greatest challenges with the land trust?
Well, I think our challenges are not like unlike other people's challenges. Time is a big issue. You know, you look at how quickly land is being developed, and you know, can we be effective enough to really get to the place we need to be in the amount of time that it needs to be done? So yes, that takes money, but first you have to educate the public. You have to create a conservation ethic. And I think that exists in many places, but in other places it doesn't. So we just have to help people better understand how important saving land and saving water and saving nature really is. So that you need the will to do it on both a political and a personal basis. So it's time and it's will. And then, you know, with climate change and the increased rain and the storms, you know, invasive species are just a huge problem. I think the federal government spends $120 billion a year on its invasive species management. And that's also something else that we can all take a part in. If you drive along the highways right now, you see the multiflora rose and you see the porcelain berry. It's almost like kudzu was in the South, or still is in the South. So now that we're finished our gardens, or putting our gardens to bed for the fall, it's really time to look at our trees and focus on our trees, because they're doing an awful lot of good for us every day. So time, will, and invasive species. Those are my real worries.
Uh-huh. One thing we haven't talked about are all the wonderful programs that the North Shore Land Alliance offers to the public. I mean, as a nonprofit, you just do such great service in educating our communities. Can you talk about some of the programs? You have the Walk in the Woods, you have the Water Quality Improvement Program. the water education program where you actually go into schools. Can you talk about some of those?
Absolutely. So, you know, back to the mission, people have to understand why protecting land is important. And so our first step was to do the walks in the woods. So every month we bring in an expert, we go to a different place and we offer free walks in the woods. Anyone can come. There's no cost. You know, of course, we'd love you to become a member, but that's something things that we do to try to get people in nature. In addition to that, we offer lectures from time to time on things like food and climate, you know, water quality. So when you talk about a long time ago, the Nature Conservancy did some polling, and it was really quite scary how many people didn't know we sat on top of an aquifer. So we thought, what can we as a small land trust do? So we worked with Scott's Foundation and the Roush Foundation, and we put together this water education program in local schools. In Long Island, children study Long Island history in the fourth grade. So we have a program where an educator goes into the school, they help a child build an aquifer. They actually build all the layers from the sand to the rock to the land, and they pour food dye in. So they have a little pond in the corner, so they see how things that you do on top of the earth really do filtrate down into the drinking water. So it's a three-part series. So they learn about an aquifer, they learn about what they can do, and then they actually come out to one of our preserves. And often they go to Shore Road and they collect shells, and they understand about grasses and the relationship between land and water. So to date, we've touched 7,000 children in 15 school districts across Long Island. And that's been a really successful program. And then another big issue that we all have right now is nitrogen pollution. And in the part of the county where we live, it's nitrogen pollution from septics. So we've started in conjunction with the Nature Conservancy and a grant from a federal grant. We've started this water quality improvement program where we are educating the community about low nitrogen septic systems. And there are actually grants available in both Suffolk and Nassau County where you can get the majority of your costs reimbursed if indeed you put in a low nitrogen system. So we have an ombudsman in our office who works with municipalities to set up the programs. She works with people to fill out grants, and Nassau County's program will be up, and Suffolk has been the leader, and they've really identified the technology, have their systems in place, and they're doing amazing work. Nassau was a little behind, so their program is about to go full tilt on October 1st, and already they have applications for 80 low nitrogen septic systems, which actually take almost 90% of the nitrogen out of your water. So when you can't go to the beach after a rain and these red tides and brown tides create fish kills and things like that, you know, the septic is the problem. And if you can replace your septic, particularly if it's faulty, that's another thing you can do to help our environment.
Uh-huh. You know, I remember going, I'm trying to remember if you were there. I remember going to Farmingdale State College a few years ago when there was a vote on nitrogen fertilizers, whether to make them illegal on Long Island, and it was not passed. Do you know where that stands right now? I mean, is there any legislation coming up for vote to try to change that law so that only low nitrogen fertilizers are allowed on Long Island?
I do not know the answer to that question, Bhavani, but there have been some new low nitrogen products that have come out, even a new one this year. So it is really good when you need to fertilize your plants, and we often do, that you do look for a low nitrogen fertilizer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And what's the O'Neill Conservation Steward Program?
Oh, that's, you know, we talked about the Conservation Corps a little bit earlier. So there's an organization called the Student Conservation Association where children from all over America can apply to work in America's national parks. So our O'Neill stewards, actually it's a a paid internship every summer for four interns. It's competitive. We actually had 100 applicants last year who come and really get an idea about what it's like to work in conservation. You know, they work in, they do inventories of invasive plants. They do stewardship activities. They monitor easements. They have real hands-on grasps of what nonprofits do, and particularly nonprofit environmental organizations. So it helps them decide what they want to do. And that in the world of conservation, it used to be that salaries were so low that it was really tough for people to survive on them. But I'm happy to say that there's new vitality in this realm, and it's a great place for young people to want to grow up and work in conservation. And the salaries have become competitive and can indeed provide a livelihood for people now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. You know what makes money in this country is so out of skew. You know, someone works. You know, my daughter who has a doctorate, you know, is working in art, you know, a curator at the Smithsonian Museum, and you compare that to, you know, someone doing sales without any type of higher education, and, you know, they're making a quarter of the money. It's just, you know, what we value in our society is just sometimes so screwy. It's hard to understand, but I'm glad that it's changing and that people are recognizing, you know, what people need to make in order to actually have a decent living, especially in our area.
It's a give and take. So we do try to help these young people as far as a career path, but it's amazing the tremendous amount of work they really do in the summer. You know, I just don't know if we could do what we do without them. So it's a good program. Thank you for mentioning that one.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. And so we actually met years ago when we were first organizing the Long Island Food Conference, which was a great initiative that you actually got funding for to actually make it happen. Any possibility of that happening again? Any talk about that?
I think that for all of us, getting through this pandemic has been a challenge. You know, it's for our little organization, we worked from home for a little while, but we really couldn't work from home because we had to keep all the preserves open. And, you know, we were fortunate to get payroll protection loans, which kept us going. So for the last couple of years, we've done everything we could just to survive. But I think going forward, Bhavani, that's an incredibly important thing to try to get the band back together and do another food conference. Those were wonderful.
Yeah, I'd love that also. But again, like you said, we're certainly not in a place where we can all get together in an auditorium yet. So down the road, I hope we can. But you do have a fundraiser coming up. You want to talk a little bit about that?
We do. Every year we do a wine auction, and it funds, you know, almost 70% of our operating income each year. And I'm really pleased to say, Bhavani, that almost a week out, we're already sold out.
Wow.
We are so grateful to our community and for the support that they have given us. So we're I don't want to talk about it too much because we really are sold out. But in another year, it's a great party outside on a farm. And when, you know, people talk about, you know, what can I do moving forward to try to help the planet? And I think that, you know, you can plant a tree and you can plant native plants and you can join conservation organizations, because even if an individual, I don't have enough land that I could give a conservation easement, but I know that my membership and what I do to advocate for conservation issues and to support the organizations that I support are really, really important. So, you know, we all do what we can, and they're all things that all of us can do.
Uh-huh. Well, I have had the privilege and pleasure of going to one of those wine auctions, and it's really a fun thing. So those of you listening, do you know, look out for next year's invite because it's really a fun event. One other last thing I want to talk about before we run out of time, which we're almost at the end, is the Young Explorers group that you have. Want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, once again, it's back to creating a conservation ethic. People aren't going to support nature if they're not in it. And when you talk to people and you ask them kind of their conservation stories and why they got involved with this, so much of it starts with childhood experiences, and it all goes back to actually being in nature. So these little young explorers are just like our walks in the woods. These are walks in the woods for little people. So they do crafts, they build fairy houses, they identify birds and bird calls. They just do all those magical things that can really happen when children are in nature. So that's the purpose of the Young Explorers group.
And it is so important now more than ever. I mean, these kids, so many kids just don't even go outside. They're in front of these square boxes, whether it's TV, computer, games, you know, just on the internet. It's just so sad. You put a young child outside sometimes and they don't even know what to do. They don't know how to, you know, be in nature. They don't know how to use their imagination. It's really a deficit, you know. It's really so sad. So I'm sure.
Well, even at the Humes Preserve, we put a children's nature play area in. It's pretty unsophisticated in that they can walk on a log, or they can sit on another part of a log, or they can play on a xylophone that's made out of bamboo, or they can play in a teepee. But you just need, every parent needs to make every, you know, to do everything they can to keep their children outside, because it instills peace in them and it instills connection, and it's something that they'll keep for the rest of their lives.
Absolutely. It's so important. And I think also just bringing kids together, so it also has a social aspect, because a lot of times, you know, kids don't necessarily want to be alone in nature, although that's very magical as well, as we know. You know, bringing kids together and having them take these walks. Now, are they led by, you know, a person on your staff that is also teaching them while they're walking, or?
Yes, but not too much teaching. Actually, our interns love to work with the children. So many times we put our really young staff with the young children, and I think it is a good give and take. But if I were to end, Bhavani, and you said we're getting to the end, we just encourage people to get outside, come and enjoy our preserves. They're there for you. And the wonders with fall right around the corner. I was at Humes Tuesday and the grasses turned purple. And, you know, when you get the sunflowers are blooming over at Island and the birds are passing through. So come out, come enjoy what we're lucky enough to be surrounded by.
Yeah. And the owls. I couldn't, when we were working on the, over by the, what was the one that goes into the Planting Fiends? Island.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The owls were so vocal. It was great.
Well, we'll be doing a program, in October, and it's on the website. I can't remember the date, but it's an owl prowl. So if you're interested in owls, sign up to come hear them at night at Island.
Really? Okay, I'll be there. Well, Lisa, thank you so much. I know, you know, we tried getting you on for so long, and I'm so glad we finally made it happen. The work you're doing is just amazing. I will share your website with the North Shore Land Alliance on my website and in my newsletter so that everyone can find it. But those of you listening now, you know, check out the NorthShoreLandAlliance.org. Everything we've talked about is up on their website. And Lisa, I just can't thank you enough for the work you're doing. Thank you so much.
Bhavani, thank you for all you do. You are leading the way on so many levels.
Thanks. And everyone listening, have a great rest of the week. And I'll see you all again next week. And let me know if you make that recipe. It's really outstanding one. So enjoy. Bye for now and have a great weekend. Bye, everyone.